Accession number 24193, reel 13.
Mr. Town, reel 13. We're talking about the welfare role you had as a young officer, and you mentioned that after liaison with the Padre Wild, that often the Royal Norfolk Regiment Association would be contacted. Now, what could they do?
They would, on an instruction from battalion headquarters, which would go back, and it would have to be in writing, therefore relatively slow, the Padre would write a description of the event and ask the Regimental Association, based in Britannia Barracks, Norwich, to go and visit and assess the situation and what aid could be provided by through the Regimental Association, assess the situation, was it necessary for the soldier to return? I did not ever know of that such an event of a soldier returning, but a response would come back. And a soldier would be told, for example, that his mother had been visited, she'd been taken some things, or they've helped her get to hospital, she'd had an operation, she's doing well, and she's moving back, and that'll be followed up by the association. And it really worked very well indeed. Norfolk was very proud of its Royal Norfolk Regiment, and there were advertisements all the time, I understand, for aid, for packages, parcels, donations, and that system seemed to work, and the association was particularly good on calling on soldiers' families that were having problems. And there were lots of problems. There weren't too many families as such, because don't forget, they were mainly national servicemen, and they hadn't got, like a regular battalion, all the family issues that normally follow a more permanent soldier.
Now, what they would have, though, is girlfriends, and some of them would have young wives.
Yes.
A few. What about the Dear John issues, but Dear John letters, issues like that?
Yeah.
Was that seen as a serious problem, or was that just...
No, it really... You know, Dear John, I've found another boyfriend, I'm sorry, goodbye, lots of luck. And the soldier would get desperate and so on. No, I didn't ever... And I put it down to the youth of the platoon. The sergeants would generally take care of themselves through the sergeant's mess, if it were necessary, through the senior non-commissioned officers' ranks, and they would advise and talk to each other if there was a real family, you know, wife goes off or is feeling neglected and deserts the home. But the soldiers almost entirely were national service. They were of that age of, I think you had to be 18 to go to Korea, go into active service. Most at that age didn't have much money. Most weren't married. And it wasn't really a Dear John problem. They all carried photographs of their girls, friends. Some carried several photographs of several girlfriends. So it was of that nature. And pin-ups, of course, were very, very necessary in the dugouts. They were, but of course, in that age, even the pin-ups wore clothes. I don't think they do anymore.
Now, you mentioned a beer ration. Tell me about
that. The officers got a ration, and I would like to think it was about 4 bottles a week.
Of beer?
Of beer. It would be acai beer. Which is a Japanese beer, which always arrived with a straw jacket, which obviously prevented it from being broken on in transit. And I'm trying to remember, and I believe the soldiers also got a beer ration, and I would like to say it was probably 1 bottle a week. It would be a big bottle. And it was only 1 brand, acai beer, which was very, very good. And what we would try and do is put it all together and have a little bit of a party. If there was a quiet time and you could plan a quiet time, one didn't drink before going out on patrol or anything of that nature. Sometimes you'd save it up for if you knew you were going into reserve. Sometimes you would have a section party which hadn't been out on patrol, wasn't going out on patrol for a bit, and the officer and the sergeant would go into a dugout in that section, and you would drink your beer, and your ration would go in towards it. The officer also got a bottle of whiskey a week as well, and sometimes, you know, you'd pass that round. And the parties were really rather fun. They would probably last about an hour, and particularly in reserve, you would have sing-songs. You would have your you'd play drinking games, like I drink to the health of Cardinal Puff for the first time, and what you do is you then drink a sip of your beer and touch your nose, say the tip of your nose. The next person goes on and says, I drink to the health of Cardinal Puff for the second time, and takes two sips and touches his nose and his right ear lobe. And the third one goes on and says, and you've got to get it correct. If you make a slip, which you will, at number three or four, then you have to drink your whole glass. It sounds not very serious, but it was quite funny, and the soldiers enjoyed it. And they loved getting the officer to be sort of silly and sing risky songs. You know, A Foggy, Foggy Dew, I remember, is one particularly, which I'm not going to sing it, but it goes, one day I worked at the weaver's trade, and I was unmarried, and I had a son, and every time I looked into his eyes, it reminds me of the one I loved. And it went on like that. But it suggested all the time you weren't married, and how did you have the son? And of course the soldiers loved it and had it, and would sing. All this time, if you did it in the line, it was a bit difficult. But it was quite important to keep morale going. More often or not, it was critical that you did this in reserve. And occasionally, the officer, talking about these sort of things, if you had a neighborhood, a neighboring company which was not of your regiment, what you needed to do was to go and make contact with that commander, which would be a platoon like us. And it depends upon the nationality. We've had Turkish beside us, we've had Canadian, we've had American. And despite the American forces being dry, part of the contact was having discussed your interlocking fire and your defensive fire tasks, and how you were going to support each other if you were within that range. And then you would sit down and you would have a comradely drink or two. And occasionally you'd be invited over if they were having a national day. 4th of July for the Americans, or Canada Day for the Canadians. And it was important that you went. But you would go with somebody, a runner. You'd make sure that people knew where you were, and that your time of coming back, you had therefore had not to drink too much, was well known, so that you weren't challenged, as you might be on approaching your own platoon position, and get shot at. There was a case of one of our officers who was actually shot and wounded approaching his own line, his own platoon, because there was a misunderstanding. We had passwords all the time. They had to be simple to be effective, and they had to be linked so that you could football or something of that sort. But it's not a very satisfactory set of circumstances, particularly if it is at night. and you don't want to make a noise, so you say foot, and the other person doesn't hear you. It can be quite dangerous. There was the beer ration. It was highly appreciated.
How long would you be in the line?
I think in our year, we were out of the line twice in reserve. That's not including the time we then were on our way out.
So you'd go into the line and you'd stay there. I mean, you wouldn't go in and out every week or two.
Oh, no. You absolutely stayed there for as long as your term of duty was, and then the whole battalion came out.
Now, I don't know whether there's any more incidents you remember from the Sammy Chon area before we... Because I wondered how long you were in the line there, because you'd gone there in about November, I think.
I think we'd gone there in November, and I seem to remember that in the Sammy Chon, we were there from November 1951 to March 1952, which makes 5 months, 4 months.
And
4 months in the Sammy Chon.
Any other incidents you remember from that time that we haven't already covered?
No, I think that was probably... It was a static life. It wasn't violently in contact with the enemy. The enemy were also not in violent contact with us. We all went out to seek each other in no man's land. We never had an attack on our position as such in the Semichon Valley. We never actually attacked their front line in the Semichon Valley. We attacked a number of each other's listening posts, patrol, same thing, or a reconnaissance patrol, or a patrol. And then, of course, you ambushed and you tried to take a prisoner. But it wasn't a constant interface of potential battle, which the 355 area was very much so.
Now, what about... Were you ever ambushed or... I mean, in other words, were you ever caught in no man's land by the Chinese or North Korea?
No, not in the Semichon Valley at all. No, that was... and it really was... the incident of the deer took place in the Semichon. I remember some of the soldiers were from the farming communities of Norfolk, and they had observed there were pheasants and there were fish around, and they wanted to eat fresh meat, fish. And they would occasionally note that there would be a bunch of pheasants around, and they would like to go out and ambush the pheasants. And one would give, I think, a little bit of illegal permission to do so, provided they were properly armed and there'd be a little bit of an escort. And they would go out and snare pheasant.
Not shooting them?
No, they would snare them. And they would have bait, food that they would lay out. Food was always scarce, I imagine, particularly in winter. And we were in the winter period in the Semichon. And they would bring back pheasant. There were some ponds, but this was lakes, generally in reserve positions, where hand grenades were thrown in, and the hand grenade would explode, and the fish would rise, stunned, to the surface. And those were edible. But we were not. I was not ever ambushed in Korea. Shelling, in Semichon, shelling took place, mortar and artillery. Our woundeds were more from that activity than any other. There was light patrol. We didn't lose in C Company, we didn't lose a single soldier killed on patrol activity. We had several killed due to shelling, and I did touch on that in the sense that if a wound happened during a shelling bout, the soldier was brought into the command post in the platoon and identified and looked at. And so often there'd be a little tiny hole, almost not bleeding. And one soldier, I remember, had a wound on his inner thigh, tiny wound, and he was quite bright, and so we sent him back, but bandaged his leg, looked after him. He was in pain. We gave him some morphia, and expected to see him back in a week's time, and I learnt that he died. Apparently the shrapnel had gone in, hit the bone, and travelled vertically upwards into his, you know, his stomach. And there was no evidence of that at all. And several of those rather strange, quirky incidents happened. But as I said earlier, the shelling and the mortaring was light at the beginning. You know, 1 to 3 shells would arrive, and then there'd be a week when there was nothing. Later on, as their supply lines improved, and it was a static position, they were able to build up sufficient, I think, ammunition and weaponry that it became a very active battle with heavy use of artillery. We didn't have tanks in the line in the Samichon. We had them in the 355 area.
We'll come to that, yeah.
In honesty, other than patrolling, which was always likely to be dramatic, but there was a lot of waiting and ambushing and so on, activity was not at a high level.
Now, so you pulled out in March 1952 and went into reserve. Where did you go into reserve?
And that was about 10 miles behind the line, and at a place called the Pak Hak Reservoir, P-A-E-K-H-A-K Reservoir. And that's about 10 miles behind the lines. I think of beautiful chestnut trees, if I remember. And we had tents and dugouts. And it was used as a staging post for new battalions coming in and old ones, those needing a rest, went there. And you had 5 days, no, more than 5 days, a couple of weeks. Unfortunately, the time we were there, the Chinese shelled us, which we thought really wasn't cricket and playing a fair game at all. We were in reserve. We were right back. We felt, I remember our regimental aid post was hit and a man killed. There were shelters, we had slip trenches dug and ready for this thing. Part of the Korean War problem was the considerable number of guerrillas left behind when the North Korean and Chinese army retreated from Busan, more North Korean. They left behind, by accident or by design, nobody knows, considerable number of soldiers who became nothing more than guerrillas, harassing behind the lines, not on any well-organized type of activity. I mean, bridges weren't blown up and main supply channels weren't disrupted, but there'd be harassing raids, mainly on supply centers to take food and that sort of thing. We felt by then, things were beginning to solidify, that perhaps some agents had crossed through the lines, linked up with some of these guerrillas, and were able to walk around with very powerful communications up in the mountains, able to communicate back. And the shelling of the regiment in reserve was very methodical. They searched valleys. Nothing in that valley, the next valley, nothing, and the next valley was us. And it was only just one event. And they probably fired 12 rounds of artillery. But there, the soldiers had a rest, bath, good food. I think a central mess was set up. They, washing, cleaning, probably even being issued a fresh set of clothing. And I think it was going into the summer, so I think the heavier winter clothing was being exchanged at that time for a more summer suitable type of equipment. And that would have happened there. Repairs to your weaponry and so on, you might exchange your Sten gun or rifle or whatever.
Now, what about recreations? It's something you mentioned earlier, the five-day recreational program. Now, that's in when you're in the line, I think. But could you talk about that and then about the recreations at Paikak Reservoir area?
The five-day R&R, as it was called, was a rite, and you went wherever you were. When your turn came, you went to Tokyo. You flew to Tokyo in military aircraft. You had 5 days in a sort of NAFI-type army camp where you could go out into Tokyo if you wished, or you could stay in the camp, which had, and I had my 5 days R&R, you had plenty of very good food, plenty of baths, hot water, typical Japanese style, full of great comforts, sheets on the beds, even if they were cots in army cots in dormitories, but you were all mixed. You came from the Gunners, you came from the Australian Regiment, came from the Canadian, came from the Royal Norfolk, or whatever. And you went in little groups from the battalion. You might be about 10. So there was a group, and that group then decided what it would do. Some stayed in the camp and just enjoyed the constant bathing and very good food. Some went to hit the sort of high points of Tokyo, but they didn't last long because it cost a great deal of money and they hadn't got it. They would drink their, you know, the good share of beer and so on, and generally had a marvelous time and came back. And some said it was so exhausting being on 5 days R&R, it was good to get back in the line and have a rest. The in reserve, apart from, you know, slightly austere methods of bathing, slightly austere food, but it was centralized food. It was a better night's sleep. There wasn't unnecessary square bashing. You'd be able to change your clothes. Get your own personal body attended to by the MO if you'd had problems. Athlete's foot was always a problem. If there was a little bit of frostbite, which hadn't properly healed or whatever, that was attended. In Patagonia, we talked about those sort of things could be attended. You spent a lot of time on your clothing, making sure that it was proof against whatever bug. Dengue fever was considered a great problem, and you saturated the seams of your clothing, particularly going into the summer, with a material which prevented dengue fever, which was quite dangerous.
What was dengue fever, and why did that prevent it?
It was contained in some form of lice, and it was a very dangerous fever, often fatal, and it was prevalent in Korea, and is actually prevalent and endemic in parts of Asia. Malaria was a problem. And constant record-keeping in the summer as to the soldiers taking, I think it was either Mepocrine or Paladrin.
You mentioned that, yeah.
Right, okay. And generally speaking, your body, your feet were, you know, your clothing is your boots in good repair. Often you got a complete set from top to bottom, equipping yourself for the summer. You played football. There was a sort of ready pitch. You had competitions between the companies, probably volleyball, hockey. I do remember playing, yes, I've forgotten about this. I do remember playing on the Imjin in winter, and the Imjin was quite close, against the Canadian regiments. And we'd play on the edge of the Imjin, thick ice, ice hockey. Of course, you can imagine how much experience members of the Royal Norfolk Regiment had in ice hockey. So I think we were always beaten, but we had a wonderful time. We didn't know how to play it. And just about that time, we noticed that the engine was, which had very thick ice, down to 2 feet of ice, the river was beginning to thaw, and it was fascinating. Huge, great ice flows would come down the engine, and the bridges that were built across, military bridges, one was called Teal, and Pintail. Teal is one, and Pintail was another. And they were army, a bit better than pontoon bridges. They would take tanks, but they were quite fragile. And what happened was that initially, as the spring thaw took place, and it was all about the time we were in reserve, we played ice hockey, and almost the next day spring came. And what they finally, because one bridge was completely destroyed, I think it was the one, Pintail, which was upriver, they established a troop of Centurion tanks, two on either side, to shoot at the ice flows that came down the Imjin River and break them into smaller fragments. The tanks enjoyed it enormously, and it was very effective. But that was the beginning of the spring, and the world changed. It suddenly became very hot.
Now, hang on. What about the recreation, the other recreation? I mean, did that for the men? I mean, was there sort of canteens and concert parties? Or
yes.
Did any big stars come over? You know.
Yes, you know, you're absolutely right. And I'm trying to think. Who, the star who sang, I'm sure, White Cliffs of Dover.
Vera Lynn.
Vera Lynn came over. And I was detailed to escort her in the regiment, go and get her from battalion headquarters, regimental headquarters, bring her to the reserve area where she gave a concert. And I think it was Vera Lynn. I'm almost sure it was. And of course, my job as being escort was very jealously guarded by me, and I had so many offers of what did I need to do this. Anyway, she came. There were several concerts. There was one given by us. There was a little play that the officers' mess put on. Now, I remember I had to get dressed in a woman's dress and pretend to be a woman for a bit, which, of course, caused a great, great hoot. There were these games, these drinking games, which were not officially approved, but the officers' mess would have them, the invite the sergeant's mess round, or vice versa. Or you would arrange to buy beer from the central NAFI, there'd be a NAFI at the reserve position. And you'd have the platoon, as opposed to a section, would have a beer night. You would go, the sergeant would be there, you would probably invite the company commander and the company sergeant major, and you'd all have to perform and sing funny, risky songs, and you'd drink your beer and you'd play the drinking game of Cardinal Puff, and nobody ever got to position number 9 or 10, and you'd tell jokes. The air would become thick with smoke because smoking was encouraged. They had free cigarettes with their rations, so everybody had cigarettes and so on. And it was a great party, and much was made of it, and I think thick heads were there because they wanted to be. I don't think it was heavy drinking. I just think it was the relaxation, the relaxing of tension, and we want to have a party. We're going to have a wonderful time. And the officers and sergeants and so on made somewhat fools of themselves, all thoroughly enjoyed. And there was always a comedian somewhere in the group who would get up and sing, and then we'd have sing-songs. One was, I remember a wonderful thing. I've got cousins of every kind. I've got cousins of every kind. England, Ireland, Scotland and Wales, Russia, Prussia and Jerusalem, South Africa, America and Germany, all along the line. but I'm if the RSM of the First Norfolk, then he's no cousin of mine, and then it goes on using F words and so on.